You know, every time I walk on stage to give a speech, the first words out of my mouth is, exercise is a poor way to lose weight. Now, think about it. I'm a guy who tells people to exercise. That's how I make my living. But I also, every time I walk into a new client, I will tell them, look, I'm not here so you can eat ice cream every night. That won't work. You will actually gain weight that way. I just did a podcast with my buddy Chris Kostman, and we talked about the number of ultra cycling riders and runners we know who have weight to lose. These are people who run copious amounts of miles and ride bikes for 15, 20 hours a week, yet they can't seem to lose weight.
You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch.
What's happening, guys and gals? Welcome back to another throwback episode of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. Before we jump into this old school episode, I want to thank you guys for all the ratings and reviews that you've gave this podcast. It helps spread the good word of fitness to more people, so keep it up. Just go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or your preferred podcast app and give us a rating review. Also, don't forget to visit addictedtofitnesspodcast.com. We've got a lot of information about each of these episodes in our show notes page, and we have an awesome shop page where you can check out our affiliates like the Hemp Coffee Exchange and Stick Mobility. So, I want to give you guys our very first interview with a health and fitness pro who happens to be releasing a documentary very soon called Fat, a Documentary. And just to let you know, it's about dietary fat. So, please, without further ado, enjoy this old school episode of the Addicted to Fitness podcast.
Welcome back, everyone. This week's episode features an interview with Vinny Torridge, where we talk in depth about several issues regarding fitness and nutrition. Vinny Torridge is one of my favorite people, to listen to, especially on podcasts, concerning fitness and nutrition. I know I talked to Shannon about it ad nauseum, and probably makes her sick to hear his name, but he's somebody who I really regard as a true, as a reliable source when it comes to fitness and nutrition information.
Yeah, I actually subscribe to his podcast and follow him on Twitter as well.
Oh, really?
Yes, he's a very honest gentleman. I like that.
Honest is a good way to put it. Like I said, this episode, I think Shannon and I agree, is probably maybe PG-13.
Yeah, I'd say we keep it relatively PG, minus the few like F-bombs I might drop every once in a while. Sorry about that. But I would definitely say he's much more frank and unfiltered.
Yeah, then that's why
Which is good.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I gravitate towards him, and I think a lot of people do too, mm-hmm. because he doesn't try to sugarcoat anything, you know, definitely doesn't sugarcoat anything. As you guys will hear later on, you'll kind of get that reference. But he has a ton of great information, and we talk about it we have a long form interview, and we talk about really a lot of the key things that are facing this country right now and people in regards to nutrition. And I don't think we're really going to spend too much time talking about the interview. We're just going to get it right into it. So here it is, guys, my interview with Vinny Torridge.
Enjoy.
This week I still can't believe I got this guy to come on the show and interview him. He has been a personal trainer for almost 40 years. His book, Fitness Confidential, is one of the highest rated fitness books on Amazon. And besides his buddy, Adam Carolla, he's probably the hardest working man in the world of podcasting. I'm talking about my man, Vinny Torridge. What's up, Vinny?
Wow, I'm only number two as the hardest working man. I don't know about that, because I saw Adam earlier today and he wasn't working that hard.
Really?
I'm just saying, he was working, but he wasn't working that hard. Oh. So I'm a little confused about being the number two guy when in fact I could very well be the number one guy.
Well, it's probably where effort-wise, if I could see both of you working, it'd probably be you number one. But, you know, I hear him on the daily podcast, and yours is pretty much every other day. So that's the only thing I'm basing it on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Adam works a lot harder than I do. I didn't actually see him today. I spoke to him earlier, actually, on a phone call. But he's a very interesting guy, because he's got a house, and he's rebuilding his kitchen in his house, and he can't leave it to anyone else. He has to do it himself. So in between talking to me, he was yelling at people to get stuff done in his kitchen.
Well, that's, yeah, because obviously he has the contractor background. So now he, and then that, I think that's with anybody. I know my dad was a farmer, and he grew up, and whenever we would cut, even when cutting the grass, simplest thing is cutting the grass. If we didn't do it exact way he liked, he would come over and show us, this is how you do it. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I was doing that, but of course, you know, it wasn't his way.
Yeah. But, yeah, and you know, there's a lot of truth in that. And Adam, he's a very accomplished guy. So I think we can all take a page from his book.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And I think that's luckily I listen to him on a daily basis, and that's how I discovered you and your book, Fitness Confidential. And I have to recommend it because I recommend the audio version because I love listening to it. I've just started listening to it for a third time. I wonder if you could kind of tell the listeners why your book is kind of different than any other fitness book that's out there.
You ever hear the term, the term is dance like no one is watching?
Yes.
That's how we wrote, when I say we, my partner and I, Dean Laurie, that's how we wrote Fitness Confidential. Dean asked me to write down a few notes because he had this idea that I could write a great book. You know, he knew about me from the Hollywood community. And Dean's a pretty big comedy writer, you know, and dramatic writer also in Hollywood. He's written for shows like Arrested Development, and he wrote the movie Major Payne, and, you know, just different movies like that. And he's also written some very successful books, and he kept on me about writing a book. And finally I went, all right, I guess I can sit down and write a stupid book. And so I did, in notes. So I had 40-something thousand words in notes. And then Dean and I sat down to start fleshing those notes out. Can't remember there. Oh, dance like no one's watching. While we were fleshing them out, we didn't have a book deal. We didn't have anything. We just had this book we started writing during the writer's strike here in L.A., and we just sat in a room every day for like 3 hours, taking all of my 45,000 words and notes and fleshing them out to over 100,000 words. And then we honed that down to about 63,000 words, and that's the book you have in your hand or the one you're listening to. And you know, when you write a fitness book, no one would write about their experience in cancer and trying to get laid while they have a chemo pump hooked to them. No one would talk about their clients asking them to rub their boobs so they don't get hard because they had a boob job. But we wrote the book as if no one would ever read it. What we didn't count on was that the book would become wildly popular. And that's what happened. I'm not bragging about the book. I'm just explaining what happened to the book. And now my understanding is other people are trying to write books the same way. It's like, hey, how can I put my experiences in fitness in the book? Or I was a barber for 30 years and some crazy, wacky things happened in that barbershop. I can write that into a book. I don't think you could just, and I don't think Dean and I could even write that book again. You know, it was a moment in time when we just sat there for 6 months and fleshed out a ton of notes and then put some anecdotes around it. And it became this book that people find very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally honest. Like it's the definition of kind of, since I'm listening to it, it's almost like the what reality TV wanted to be, because it's just so honest and it's not, this is how you do a push-up, or this is how many grams of protein you had a day. Like you said, you basically gave a honest take on your, not just your life, but then your life as a personal trainer, and then everything that goes along with it, you know, including, you know, doing the, I don't know if it was called the boob rub, or what I know you just alluded to. I don't know. You had a word or a description for it, because for the ladies that got the implants.
Yeah, we called it in the book, it's called the jug rub.
That's it.
Yeah. And, you know, when we wrote that, like Dean was asking me, you know, that note wasn't written. But we were talking one day, we were taking a little lunch break and we were eating olives in his kitchen, as two Italians would do. And he goes, man, look, you know, you've been my trainer for years and I've never asked you this. But you ever sleep with any of your clients? And I said, no, it's never been my thing. You know, I've always kept that separate and whatnot. And he said, well, has anything sexual ever happened? I said, well, not directly sexual, but there's a little thing I call the jug rub. And he goes, the what? I said, the jug rub. And he goes, what are you talking about? And I said, oh, back in, you know, in the early 80s when they first started putting boobs on these girls, they used to do it a different way. And they would get hard after a while. The scar tissue would build up and they would get hard. And the doctors told these women that the way they could keep them supple is that they had to like massage them out. And it wasn't like a fun massage. It was like you had to get in there and massage the scar tissue. And, you know, you would think their husbands would want to do them. But look, after you've seen the same set of tits over and over and over, it's like, yeah, look, honey, I just, you know, that's not what I'm into right now type of thing. And, so I was the guy that I was at their house every day, and for God's sake, I was in the fitness industry and so on and so forth. And they would say to me, I know this sounds weird, but would you mind doing this? And I was like, it's not out of mind, but and there was nothing sexual about it, you understand,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
But you start rubbing a woman's tits and you can't help but have your mind wander. And, you know, I gotta be honest, half the time I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm getting an erection here. And this is odd because this is not a sexual moment, but you start rubbing boobs. And then after a while, you got to start thinking about, you know, dead nuns and baseball and babies and other stuff just to keep your mind off of what the next step might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say that this only happened with one client, but I gotta be honest with you, back in the day, late 80s, early 90s, when everybody and their cousins started getting boob jobs, I would go to a client's house and go, oh, it's only a matter of time before I'm going to get asked to do the jug rub.
Right. So, and I know it's probably, especially for where, because you were mainly in Hollywood, was that correct, as a trainer?
Yeah, well, I started in New Orleans, and the first jug rub actually happened there. I don't want to say the woman's name. I still know the woman. She's in her 70s now. We're talking 1980-something, and the boob jobs were just kind of starting, 84 maybe, something like that, 83. And she said, look, you know, my doctor said I needed to do this. And I was this young guy. I was maybe 23, 24. I was young. And I was like, geez, okay, you know. And I was like looking away. And she was like, you don't have to look away. I mean, you know, a lot of these women were proud of their breasts. They just had these nice new perky breasts put in after they had two or three kids. And the whole thing was just odd. And we thought that would be interesting to write in a book. You know,
and like I said, that's the kind of stuff that's in the book. It's just, total honesty. And that's why I love it so much and been listening to it multiple times. And there's a lot of other great things in the book that you go into detail about. But one thing which I think is extremely important, like now currently in the state that we are in the United States, is kind of an acronym you came up with was NSNG, which stands for No Sugars, No Grains. And I would love for you to kind of explain that a little bit more and why you think that's kind of one of the keys to beating the obesity problem we have in the United States right now.
You know, it's interesting because when I wrote the book, if you notice in the book, I never say NSNG. It's just no sugars, no grains. And, you know, I've been pushing that to my clients for a million plus years, you know, since the early 90s. And I was like, look, this is not Atkins. This is not low carb. Paleo didn't exist back then. This is, you can have all the carbs you want as long as it's a vegetable. And they will go, well, what about quinoa? And what about, this and what about that? What about ancient grain? And I was like, no, no sugar, no grains. And I would just, that became my mantra in California and Hollywood, and people kind of grabbed onto that. And so I talked about my new no sugar, no grain approach in a book. I said, look, this is basically all you have to do, because you're, by taking out sugars and grains, when you think about it, you're taking out all processed foods. You're basically taking away all junk food, right?
Right.
The only thing you have to follow after that is maybe stay away from a white potato, which is basically a sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was always my mantra. And that's what kind of made me, I don't know if you could say famous, but infamous in Hollywood. And then when I wrote the book, I brought forth the whole no sugars, no grain notion. And again, not thinking that we would sell a copy. You got to remember that part of it. I know what you're thinking, well, Jesus Christ, this book is like a bestseller on Amazon. And it was, you know, it was at number one at one point, and a couple of times it went to number one. And, you know, people are still buying it 3 years later. And, you know, the information is just as new today as it was on day one, and so on and so forth. And I started seeing hashtag NSNG online. And because of that, it's like, NSNG, what does that mean? Oh, no sugars, no grains. And then my attorney said, you need to own that before someone else owns it. And so I had to go and copyright that. And the government didn't want to give me a copyright at first, because they said, we don't like to just give copyrights for just erroneous letters put together, you know. Mm-hmm. It would be like the PLO, you know, going and saying, you know, we want a copyright on the letters PLO.
Right.
Or the Sibianese Liberation Army back when that existed, you know, just wanting to get that, you know, as numbers. So they won't hand that out. But my attorney made a good case to the fact that I was already making money on that brand. So by definition, the brand belonged to me. And when the government went and saw what I was doing, it's like, oh my God, he's got a book, he's got a website, he's got a podcast, and it's all around this notion of NSNG. And then of course they gave me, you know, that. So that's kind of how it happened. It, you know, I kind of backed into something I owned all along and had to go and get it.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do you think, like you mentioned earlier, the, you know, essentially getting rid of processed foods really is what kind of the essence of NSNG. Why do you think that's really the kind of the key to fighting obesity in the United States?
Well, look, back when there were two guys, you know, there was Ansel Keys and there was a guy in England, his name is escaping me right now, who was fighting over which is more important, more fat in our diet or more carbohydrates. And Ansel Keys won. God, I wish I could remember the other guy's name. I don't know. This is the third podcast I'm doing today. That's why I'm having a little trouble remembering things.
That's all right.
Well, his name will come to me in a second.
Yes.
Anyway, Ansel Keys won out, and we started eating more grains, more, as they say, quote unquote, heart healthy grains, which is the craziest notion we've ever put forth as humans. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a heart healthy grain. I mean, that's crazy talk. And, you know, this notion came around, and as Americans, we started getting fatter and fatter. And since the rest of the world kind of follows the United States, the rest of the world is getting fatter and fatter too. It's not the, you know, we think, oh, it's McDonald's. Well, that's easy to point. You know, let's point at Ray Kroc. No, we did a lot worse than that. We started telling people that eating snack wells in the 80s was a good idea. Pull out everything, pull out all the fat, and just, you know, you have to add something in when you pull fat out. So let's add more grains and more sugar to it. And by the way, we have this cheaper sugar now called high fructose corn syrup. It's cheaper and sweeter, and our liver sees it a little differently, not in a good way. And so we started doing that. You know, so one bad thing led to another bad thing. And before you know it, here we are with what you might call yourself a real problem.
Yeah, I just looked. I think the CDC just released some sort of a, I think they call it some sort of a national health survey. I guess they surveyed I think it was almost 100,000 households and at least 30,000 adults. And I think they reported back that over 30% of them put themselves in the obesity category or obese category.
Yeah, we have a real problem, and if we don't fix it, I hate to be the guy going, if we don't fix this, we're going to hell in a handbasket. But, you know, the bottom line is we are going to hell. Excuse me. We are going to hell in a handbasket, and fairly quickly, if we don't somehow fix the problem, you know?
And I think there's one of those mini-isms that's contained in within your book, which we kind of just alluded to, is the worst thing about fat is that it's called fat. And I think people still have the fear in them that if I eat a fatty food or I eat a food that's high in fat, I'm going to get fat. And that's a way I understand is simply not true.
Completely untrue. You know, I've always said if we called fat energy, you know, it's like I'm not eating fat, I'm eating energy, people would have no problem with it. You know, but that's not the case. But the bottom line is fat won't make you fat. But we get confused because fat is what's on our body. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, I understand. Like I said, everybody says, you know, they associate the word fat with being heavy, having extra weight. They don't understand that it's an important macronutrient and that, in essence, it has more, it has more energy per gram than either carbohydrates or protein. So they don't understand the beneficial facts of it. They just see fat means I can potentially be fat.
Well, you know, and to add to that, you know, just recently – you know, I do these phone calls at VinnieTutteries.com. People can just, you know, call and talk to me, you know, that easy. And someone was telling me that they went to their doctor. One of my phone calls, the guy weighed 400 pounds. And the doctor said, look, you know, you have fatty liver disease. So I want you to eat lower fats and start upping your heart healthy grains. Now, this is a doctor. This is an MD. Telling a guy with fatty liver disease to cut down on fat and raise his carbohydrates. Now, you don't have to be a doctor to know how goose liver pate is made. If you live in Southern California or California in general, it's illegal to make goose liver pate in this state. The reason being is the way you make goose liver pate is you have to give the goose fat livers. Mm-hmm. The way they do that is they force feed them grains all day. They have a tube in their mouth with grains and sugar going in constantly. And we decided that that was cruel and unusual punishment to an animal. Yet we have doctors saying you have fatty liver disease. And in order to fix that, you need to eat more grains. That makes no sense to me at all. But that's what we're doing.
And I think you've probably mentioned it before, and you've been onto multiple podcasts, including with Dr. Drew, and kind of talked about, it almost seems like the lack of education just general practitioners get about nutrition, which I think also kind of proliferates the problem of is one of the problems that's why obesity keeps just rolling on and increasing, and the numbers just keep going on, up and up, is that medical practitioners are unfortunately don't possess the knowledge, the proper knowledge.
No, they don't. And it's not their fault. You know, they learned what they learned in college. And that was that. You know, they learned it and then they moved on. And what they learned in college was completely wrong in a lot of cases. And most doctors will tell you that everything they learned in college about nutrition, and some people will say less than 2 weeks worth. Some people will say less than 2 days worth, and some doctors you talk to will tell you less than 2 hours worth. You know, Dr. X, who comes onto my show, we call her Dr. X because she likes to talk freely. You know, she's a hospitalist. She works in a huge hospital here in LA. She comes on the show and she'll say, we barely had 2 hours, you know, of any kind of nutritional study in my whole time of becoming a doctor. Mm-hmm. And that's just a fact.
Yeah, and that's scary. With probably the biggest, I mean, I have to imagine the biggest health problem facing right now is, you know, obesity. I can't think of anything else. I mean, obviously cancer and chronic diseases like that, but I mean, really a lot of the chronic diseases we see nowadays are probably a result of being overweight or obese.
And look, I hate to be an alarmist because I'm generally not an alarmist, but if we don't fix this problem, that will end this country. You know, people go, oh, Jesus Christ, we're the greatest country in the world. Yeah, but we can break under the weight of our own weight. And that's not meant to be funny. That's a fact. You know, we have a real problem.
Now, I know you've mentioned that multiple times, and I'm starting to kind of come over towards you. I don't want to look like the tinfoil hat, but it's a real issue when you think about it, both in the healthcare system and national security. You know, kids are, as you already mentioned, already having fatty liver disease, and they've never even touched a drop of alcohol. I think that's an issue. There's another, obviously, it's weird because we see all this, but it's almost, you almost see gym memberships, people going to the gym almost every year, and it seems like a gym pops up on every corner, but still we're kind of going in the wrong direction. And I think people think they can almost, or have the belief that they can exercise themselves thin, which is, you know, not necessarily the case.
Not the case at all. You know, it's really kind of funny because, you know, in order to think that you can, you know, every time I walk on stage to give a speech, the first words out of my mouth is, exercise is a poor way to lose weight. Now, think about it. I'm a guy who tells people to exercise. That's how I make my living. But I also, every time I walk into a new client, I will tell them, look, I'm not here so that you can eat ice cream every night. That won't work. You will actually gain weight that way. I just did a podcast with my buddy Chris Kostman, and we talked about the number of ultra cycling riders and runners we know who have weight to lose. These are people who run copious amounts of miles and ride bikes for 15, 20 hours a week, yet they can't seem to lose weight. You know, because exercise is like saying calorie in, calorie out will work. Mm-hmm. It's just another form of calorie in, calorie out. And sure, everyone's sitting there going, well, my friend Mary lost 30 pounds by doing, you know, jazzercise. And yeah, okay, good for her. But that is because she probably changed other things and or she's starving herself, which you can't continue to do. You're a fitness trainer, right?
Yes.
Okay. You tell me, Nick, if how many clients have you seen over the years who you had them under your tutelage for a while, they lost some weight, and as soon as you stopped, they gained it right back?
Well, right now, I'm pretty new into my personal training history, but I understand I've seen people since I've been in and out of gyms for a long time now, both in martial arts and just general, you know, being a gym rat. And like you said, if they can put the weight on just as quick, even if, no matter if they're exercising or not. It's really kind of just a telltale sign that, you know, their diet, they changed their diet. Either they fell off the wagon or, you know, they were on the wagon and fell back off. That's kind of the telltale sign about that, of that.
Yeah. So, you know, the truth is the truth. And people go, you know, how do you come up with this stuff? It's like, well, this is all I do.
Right.
You know, this is not me making up stuff. This is, you know, I've spent a lifetime just doing this, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I've been telling my clients too. I've been learning from you. I've been learning from people like Brad Kearns, I believe he does the Primal podcast.
Yeah.
And some other is it Dr. McPherson, the one that he created the heart rate, the 180 minus your age.
Well, Phil Maffetone.
Maffetone, that's it.
Came up with that.
Right, yeah. Yes. And I'm telling them about the importance of, you know, zone two training, that the Maffetone theory. And because I've heard from people like yourself that's really, if we're looking for fat burning zone, even though we need to complement our exercise with proper diet, the fat burning zone is really where we want to be to lose weight. And is there any way you can elaborate on the Maffetone theory a little bit more for my listeners?
Well, first off, it's not the Maffetone theory, although he made it popular.
Okay.
And I think his books are very worth it to read. Phil's got a couple of books out there. And I think Phil was very brilliant at taking something that a lot of people, it's kind of like what I did with NS&G. You know, you take something that's known that other people don't know and you just give it to them. We do call it the math method because Phil came up with it. You know, he popularized it, but you know, for athletes, we've known for a long time, in order to get faster, you have to slow down. And we've all known about the zones over the years and the whole thing. And, you know, I look, zone two, most athletes will do it for a good 3 months, 12 weeks, 8 weeks at the bare minimum to build up enough volume. And then they'll start going into some interval training and that kind of thing for their specific sports. I've actually had people go all the way through marathons doing nothing but Z2 training, and they finished the marathons faster than they wanted to, number one. And number two, with a smile on their face. I don't know if you've ever been to a marathon, but when you get past that 20-mile mark, if you're a spectator and you watch the look on these people's faces, they want to die. They have 6 miles to go. Everything is hurting, and all they want to do is get through that last 6 miles. You know, I can show you tons of people who have used this kind of zone two training. They will cross the finish line, last 4, 5, 6 miles. They're smiling the whole time. They're still in their zone. They're still working away. It is where your body will burn the most amount of fat. I can make an argument that zone three will still do that. But in zone three, you're starting to burn more sugar. So when your exercise program is over, when your session's over with, you might feel like you need to refuel on sugar and whatnot. Whereas when you stay in zone two, you get a couple of vegetables in you sometime in the next 2 hours, or you have a couple of pieces of some kind of berry or what have you, and you will be set. You won't feel like you have to go to Starbucks and eat the top shelf of the muffin cabinet.
Yeah, I remember I did only a half marathon a few years ago, and I crossed the finish line, and you know, I felt I've already kind of developed my aerobic base, and I felt good. But then people around me were getting wrapped in those space blankets, you know, that kind of almost like a tin foil. And sure. I mean, we were in Florida. It was, you know, probably, I know it was January, but it was still about 70 degrees and no humidity. And I was just kind of astounded that they were that, I mean, fatigued and just really just felt like you said, just felt like death on, they were on death's door. So.
Yeah. You see a lot of people who are just kind of white with green around their lips coming across those finish lines, and it's because they're tapped out. When you're living on the sugar, you know, on the sugar program, when you're out, you're out. You can bonk, and once you bonk, there was a famous Olympian. She was supposed to win the marathon. She was British. I want to say maybe 2 or 3 Olympics ago. It's been a while now. Can't remember her name. And can't remember a lot of Brits' names today. Oh, geez, I almost came up with the other guy's name. Oh, no, it wasn't Otto. He was from Germany. Anyway, she got to the 17 or 18-mile mark of the marathon. She was winning the whole thing. And within about 5 minutes, she started to slow down. And a minute or two after that, she just sat down on the curb of the road with her head in her hands. She was done. She had bonked. And there was no way for her to work out of that bonk. So when you're living on the sugar program, you can be the best Olympian at your sport in the world. But when the sugar's gone, there's no willing your body, you know, the last 8 miles of that marathon to win. You know, and, you know, she was disgraced.
Wow.
She just didn't figure out her sugar well enough that day. And they all live on sugar, all of them. They all do it that way. But there's another way to do it. And, you know, some coaches are coming around to it. There's some people with world records now that eat, you know, a lower sugar diet and then just use it as a trickle when they have to during the race. Zach Bitters has been very, very good at doing that. You could probably get Zach on your podcast.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Write that name down.
Yeah, look him up. Go look up Zach Bitters. He actually puts together training programs for runners and such, and you would like him.
I'm sure I've heard him on your podcast, so I'll definitely look him up.
Yeah, tell him I sent you, and you know, I like Zach. I send people to him all the time.
Now, can this, like we were kind of speaking about, we talked about the athletes and that they're moving, they really train in zone two. They know the benefit of zone two training to them. Can non-athletes do the zone two training too? Is it beneficial to them also if their primary goal is weight loss?
Yeah. Again, exercise is not a fair way to lose weight, but you will burn more fat calories doing that, which will help you in losing fat. But don't forget to continue eating fat. That's the only way you're going to get that system to work. I know it sounds like you're trying to outrun the laws of thermodynamics, but trust me on that. But yeah, zone two is very good for that. It's also the best way to get, just a broad spectrum cardiovascular workout. It's good for your heart. It's good for your lungs. If you're running or doing anything that's weight bearing, it's good for your skeletal and muscular system. It's good all the way around. And it's not just good. I would have to go as far as to say it's imperative.
Yeah, I agree. And I try to convey that fact to my clients, because normally when we get together, my training system, I incorporate, boxing and kickboxing techniques. Strength training exercises. And usually we get into the more, interval training. So it's more anaerobic. But I always tell them on days we don't train, you want to supplement your own aerobic training to build that base to make any time we do, or when you do interval training, you'll be able to do it much easier and, prevent any type of injuries and things like that if you have a better aerobic base.
Yeah, I think that's always a good idea. Yeah.
Well, I think we touched on a ton of stuff in this interview, and I really want to thank you, Vinny, for coming on and talking with me and speaking, letting my I can introduce you to at least some new listeners, some new people, because I know you're really a wealth of knowledge, not only your book, but your podcast that you put out multiple times a week, and your website, and like you mentioned already in an interview, that people can call you up and ask you any fitness or nutrition questions.
Yeah, that was something that it's funny. I did that, and never really thought that anyone would buy into it or whatever. And I take anywhere from 3 to 5 phone calls a day. And you can go to VinnyTortorese.com and book a call. I think it's fairly inexpensive for what you get. It's a half an hour. It's $100, and sometimes that's all people need. Other people, they've called me 8, 10, 12 times. Got several people that's passed their 30th phone call and a couple passed their 40th phone call. And I know that sounds crazy at $100 a pop, but these are people who have now lost 200-300 pounds. And if you would have told them 300 pounds ago that that would cost you somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000 over the course of time, they would have gone, hell yeah, sign me up. That's what we do. And, some of those have been calling for a couple of years now. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's an invaluable resource to anybody. So what I'm finding out now as, being in the early stages of being a personal trainer and obviously not having the knowledge that someone like you possesses, is that people, especially clients, they just want a reliable source that can help them or, point them in the right direction as far as fitness and nutrition, because that's anybody who enlists the service of a personal trainer. I mean, their ultimate goal is to be, have a healthier life, and they just want the information, proper information they need to do so.
You're right, Nick. And that's basically all it is. People just want to do better. And I'm glad there are guys like you out there that's willing to help.
Yes, thank you. And I appreciate you once again. Hopefully, I'm going to pull one of your tricks from that's used in your podcast. Hopefully, you had a good enough time today that you might come on in a future episode.
Dude, anytime you want me, you know where to find me.
Awesome. I love that. All right, guys, that's Vinny Tortorese. Please look look for his book on Amazon, Fitness Confidential, and his podcast, The Celebrity Fitness. Celebrity Trainer Podcast. Just search Vinny Tortorese on iTunes and you'll find him. Trust me, you're going to want to hear him. Thanks again, Vinny.
Thank you, man.
For all things Addicted to Fitness, you can check out our website, addictedtofitnesspodcast.com. You can also give us a follow on Twitter @TheATFPodcast and like and follow the Addicted to Fitness Podcast Facebook page. Last but not least, please give us a rating and review in the iTunes store. Thanks.